You're listening to Industry Iowa, presented by CIRIS, the Center for Industrial Research and Service. Here's your host, Stephen Wilson.
All right. Well, welcome everybody to Industry Iowa. I almost forgot to hit record. Mike and I just got to chatting and talking about Iowa State basketball and all kinds of things and football and thought, oops, better get back to work here. So Stephen Wilson with Industry Iowa, and appreciate Mike Wagner being with us today to talk about, well, leadership and all manner of other things that that Mike does. And I know Mike's been engaged with CIRIS through through his organization, and just excited to have you on and be able to share your wisdom and tidbits and insights. So, Mike, welcome to Industry Iowa, and tell us a little bit about who Mike is.
Thanks, Stephen. I appreciate being part of the conversation, and it's so easy to visit with you about most anything, but leadership is the big subject for me. My company I started 22 years ago is called White Rabbit Group, and our focus is on leadership. And since leadership is a gigantic subject, I mean, It's massive, we narrowed it down. And when I say we, it's my son and myself working together with our clients. We've narrowed it down to a focus on leadership as it's expressed between leaders and their direct reports. And so that's the scope of our work. That space between leaders and direct reports is where we do our work.
I love the way you put that. That space, right, between those two. And oftentimes, if there is space, you know this from conversations and lack of communication, miscommunication, if there's a gap, Oftentimes it doesn't get filled with good stuff unless it's intentional.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of metaphors for it. I mean, that space can be referred to as connective tissue. And if it's torn, performance, just like a torn ligament, affects your performance on the court. Same thing. That space is really, really crucial. So we have lots of metaphors for that space. Sometimes it's your dojo. It's where you train people. Sometimes it's where you deepen connection. Sometimes it's the place where you sit and tell the truth to one another. It's all of that, but that space is crucial.
Yeah, I guess it would be, a matter of how you want to use that space. As you say, it could be where there's a little bit of tough love, so to speak, or it could be a place of resting, but it's whatever you want to, however you choose to use it. But I think one of the things that you're saying is that intentionality.
Yes.
Working in that. And so for 22 years, and I know we've talked before, and you've got military connection as well as athletics. You studied the combat leaders, college football coaches. What did they teach you about building?
Yeah. When we started working on this and just really exploring it, we looked outside the norms of the marketplace, and combat leaders and football coaches and volleyball coaches, they taught us a lot. They taught us the importance of building a system. So that was really, really crucial. And so we call our model Connected Leader, and we see it as a system, like an operating system that you can install inside a organization, a business. And that's what we learned a little bit from military leaders. They had systems. And combat leaders were able to work that system intentionally to develop deep connections with every unit. Unit cohesion is what it's sometimes referred to as. And that makes you combat ready. Well, the same thing in sports. You have to have a system that is being worked, not just from the head coach, but from position coaches all the way down. And that interrelatedness is absolutely crucial to success on the field as well.
You talked about, again, that gap. That's where you work. What are you seeing right now in industry? And my guess is it's the same throughout industries, right? There's not one that has a particular, they're all having issues and things like that. But what are you seeing right now?
You know, one of the things that we're seeing is that, first of all, that space is often neglected.
Yeah.
So that just kind of is a given or a norm. Very seldom are people really intentionally working on that connection with their direct reports. So that's part of it. What we're seeing right now, and I think it's kind of marketplace driven, is that increasingly as we talk to senior leaders, they're telling us that they're probably not going to be enlarging their workforce. So they'll probably likely be reducing the headcount. But at the same time, the work's not going to shrink. And, you know, some senior leaders are telling me that, you know, maybe a third of their workforce may be, you know, kind of let go. But at the same time, they've got to be able to improve capacity and outcomes, and the work's not going to shrink. So that's what we're seeing right now. Can we grow the capacity? Can we become an intentional developmental culture that maximizes all that we have in terms of our human resources?
So when you say grow capacity in people, as I know there's the capacity within the organization itself as far as being able to produce more, we need to grow capacity, but you're speaking specifically to in people.
Yes, right.
And what is that actually, what's that look like day to day?
You know, sometimes, I mean, there's a lot going into it. So growing the capacity of a team with direct reports many times requires, first of all, building a strong enough relationship where people can hear what they need to hear. Mm-hmm. So, hey, people come to us maybe as potential tens, but maybe they're sixes and fives, and they're right. not really performing at a high level yet. So they have to believe that their leader, their manager, their supervisor wants the best for them and is there to actually enable them. So that's the beginning of capacity. Mm-hmm. After that, telling the truth about performance, not saving it for the end of the year review.
Don't get me started on annual reviews, Mike.
Well, and that's another thing we learned from, especially from sports leaders. That is, you don't wait for the end of the season to review the tape. You have game film that you're looking at right away so that you can make adjustments right away. And that's how you grow capacity. So being able to review performance regularly, consistently, and then saying, here's the missing skill. Here's the missing thing that you're not able to do. And that's why we're slow on our delivery. That's why we are missing opportunity, whatever it might be, and actually skilling people up. So those are some of the real crucial elements. The last would be being able to develop more leaders. When I ask leaders, I say, where do you get your leaders from? And they say, we usually buy them from other companies. So, you know, again, sports, it's like, you know, we're poaching players with NIL and enticing them to enter the transfer portal. Lots of times that's really all they do. They don't grow their own. They just go pay for, you know, somebody else's.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Yeah. You know, you talked about that gap. Been doing some work with an organization in with TWI, training within industry, and identified they don't, for these mid-level managers, these supervisors, they don't have development plans for them, you know, and they're a larger organization and have been around for many years. It's just that's not part of the culture. Is there an understanding as to maybe why organizations? I would assume you've seen the same thing.
Yeah. Stephen, I think it's there's some really good things about our instinctive culture, especially in the Midwest, that we work hard. We see the work that needs to be done and we get after it.
Yeah.
I think our weakness lots of times is not really intentionally thinking through how could I teach somebody else to do the same thing? So we sometimes refer to it as the technician trap. Your best problem solvers, your best experts are going to be heroic. They're going to step into it. They're going to get it done. And maybe the rest of the team kind of watches them do it and is there as a step and fetch it and help them, but that's about it. And so the big thing that we're seeing is, can a leader learn how to take their expertise and transfer it to another person so that they are less dependent on them. Mm-hmm. A lot of the research indicates that if you don't, some of your best performers are the most likely to burn out because they can only be heroes so often until Yeah. You know, there's just not enough of me left to go around.
Right. Right. And then sometimes, you know, if you have those individuals that are leaders that like that hero mentality, where that can be destructive as well, where it's like, oh, I've got to be the one that comes in and saves the day. And that's a very narrow focus of their roles, their responsibilities. You've been involved 22 years. I know you've been involved in leadership and different things prior to that. What trends are you seeing in leaders as it pertains to developing others, focusing on others, you know, not just being that individual contributor, but being able to grow beyond that and develop others?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the one trend is kind of just something I hear a lot of, is kind of complaints about today's workforce from leaders, managers, and supervisors. They don't have the right work ethic. I mean, there's all these kinds. And when I close my eyes and I listen to these complaints, it sounds to me like parents complaining about their kids. In fact, one of the managers said, I feel like I have to reparent my direct reports. So that's just what's happening in society. That's what's showing up in terms of the workforce. That's one trend. I think the other trend is learning how to actually shift your thinking. And some people can do it more readily than others, but shift your thinking from my value to the organization is my expertise, to my value to the organization is to transfer expertise to novices and young minds and young shoulders so that they can be better than me eventually. And so there is, I think, a recognition that we need to get there. And so that's a shift I see as well.
No, I appreciate you elaborating on that parental. And I think sometimes it can be easy for us from one generation to the next saying, well, that generation. And it's like, well, maybe we haven't shifted in the way that we connect with them.
Right.
Maybe we haven't shifted in that. And that's why there's that disconnection, because we're still treating it like the old way and the old generation, or however you want to communicate about that. But we don't shift in our method. We don't adapt our style, our method of connecting with these folks. Do you think that there's any reality to that?
Oh, totally. And, you know, some of us, so a percentage of people are like, the way I learn is I watch Stephen do it and then I do it. I'm really good at that. And that works for a certain percentage of people. I just learned by doing it, and no one ever sat down and showed me how. I just figured it out on my own. So you have a lot of people that are kind of self-starters, autodidacts, learning on their own. So you have a percentage there. But the trouble is that you think that everyone's like you.
Right, exactly. Right.
I figured it out on my own. Why can't you? I was working with one engineer, and he had actually been trained in a sense by just working with his dad, who was also an engineer. And he was struggling with his direct reports. He had three or four direct reports. And I said, Clay, I think you're an unconscious competent. And he said, what's that? I said, well, it's somebody that knows how to do the work, but could never show anybody else how to do the work. You're competent. I mean, you're gifted, but you've never thought about breaking it down to parts and pieces and steps and processes so that you could transfer it to another. I said, you got to start thinking like a music teacher trying to teach a person how to do a finger picking routine on a guitar, break it down to small steps and make it a process. It was like a revelation for him. He'd never heard the term or thought of himself as an unconscious competent.
In TWI, one of the modules is job relations, and it's just fresh on my mind because this week I was doing three sessions with a couple of different organizations, and we talk about one of the primary things in job relations is better results, better people, better relationships, better results.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and the reality for supervisors is they get results through people.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have those good relationships, those strong relationships, right, they don't add value to your point. And sometimes I'll get pushback from leaders and I say, you know what, in reality, you don't add much value. You know, it's those that are out on the front line doing the work that do the value added work. And so unless you're strengthening those relationships and connecting better with them, you're not really adding value. So that's how you add value, is by getting results, more and more results through your people as a result of being better connected, you know, all of those things, making best use of people's abilities, all of those things. And so, yeah, it,
What resonates,
as you say, we could talk all day on it. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, what do they say to you when you say you're not adding that much value? I mean, because your points, I mean, it's hard for them to deny your logic, right?
Right, exactly. And it's just that they kind of look at me like, okay, do I want to come over the table at you? How do I want to respond to that? But then I step back and, you know, say, okay, here's my point. Again, you add value, and it's just getting them to look at things mm-hmm. differently that, hey, if I'm doing all these things myself and if I'm not working to improve the connection and all those things, I'm limiting my ability to mm-hmm. impact this organization. And some receive it a little bit better than others. I'll put it that way. Mentioned the just four foundational skill sets for managers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Share with us about those.
Yeah. So when you do the research and look at the literature, you can find research that's going to maybe list 30, sometimes even more than 30 behavioral skills of supervisors, managers, and leaders. Okay. What we did is we asked ourselves, what are the four highest impact? We didn't want to add complexity. These people are already doing a lot of complex work. We wanted to really be foundational and high impact. So we landed on four behaviors that if you learn how to do them, there really are foundational that you can build on. The first is how to have an effective one-on-one mm-hmm. with a direct report.
Yeah.
Even wanting to do it sometimes.
Right.
Why should I even take time to do it? So we've been working hard on that and seen some successes. So that's a foundational skill. We want people to be able to not just use their position authority that says, hey, I'm the boss, you do it, or even their expertise. I've been doing it for 15 years, do it this way. We want them to really have a relationship where they could be coached and mentored, and they believe that their leader, their manager, had their best in mind for them. So that's step one. Step two, in terms of foundational skills, was how to give feedback and receive yeah. feedback. I was working with one guy, he's a great guy, and he has a new boss at his organization. And I said, how's it going? He says, best boss I've ever had. I said, what makes him the best boss you've ever had? He said, handles bad news better than anybody I've ever worked with. And what he went on to say is that we can give feedback to each other. I can receive it and I can give it. And he says, it's an incredibly good working relationship. Well, that's a skill. That just right. doesn't just yes. happen. And right. it can be learned. So
yeah.
effective one-on-ones, the skill of giving and receiving feedback. Then the third is what we call micro-skilling. And all micro-skilling means is inside the one-on-one relationship, we can look at what a direct report needs to work on in terms of what's missing. Sometimes it's collaboration skills with other colleagues. Sometimes it's just personal life skills. And sometimes it's technical skills too. Mm-hmm. So that's the third. And then the last is delegation. Some of the people on our teams can become people leaders as well with their right. own team and probably should. And so how do we make more leaders? How do we grow our bench? And again, rather than go out and buy some, which is expensive and somewhat uncertain in terms of success, because you think you've got somebody good, but it doesn't always work out that way. Let's grow a percentage, at least, of our people leaders inside the organization.
Why, especially in these days of dig a little deeper into the effective one-on-ones. What makes an effective one-on-one?
So many things. I mean, some of the basic things is regular one-on-ones.
Yeah.
So whatever a cadence that you tend not to miss, if you're really concerned about retaining employees, it turns out that if you have scheduled calendar one-on-ones, if you begin to miss more than 70% of the scheduled one-on-ones, you lose retention. So you really want to make that a commitment rather than perfunctory. But what makes it really great inside the one-on-one is the ability of a leader or manager to learn how to stay in inquiry and not move to advocacy. And all what I mean by that is learning how to ask questions and not know. Right. And learning how to ask clarifying questions to go deeper. Kind of what you're doing right now, which you do really, really well. In the one-on-ones, lots of times managers feel like they have to be the one with the answers. And you typically have to really use inquiry and ask questions. I, for example, when we call our model connected leader, when I have connected leader training, one thing I do is I'll give people 50 to 60 questions to use in one-on-ones because they've been collecting questions over and over again. Because they never thought about the importance of the skill of not knowing and asking good questions. And so that's absolutely key to making it a strong one-on-one.
Yeah. Good stuff.
I always say your secret superpower is that you can come across as if you don't know and you ask questions. And you'll learn what's really, really going on. One of the things that, I'm sorry, kind of rushing ahead, Britt. Nope. One of the things that we found was that in our work, we found a lot of teams, a lot of contributors and direct reports and that were hoarding work and bad news. Mm. And because no one in a one-on-one could speak up, tell the truth, no one was asking them questions about how is this project going or why we have such a high level of defects on this particular line. They were hoarding bad news and until it got so bad that no one could hide it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you familiar with Billy Ray Taylor?
No. Is not, he a country singer? I'll get his album.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. All of a sudden, I just saw a blended. I saw Billy Ray Taylor with a mullet, Billy Ray Cyrus mullet.
Yeah, right. That's where my mind went.
and it would not work well. No. Yeah. Go out on LinkedIn, connect with Billy Ray Taylor.
I will.
Billy Ray is a former tire executive. Goodyear. I don't want to say the wrong one. He was a guest on the podcast here.
Yeah.
And just a fantastic, and it talks about, leadership and had led organizations in that, but, he talked about celebrating the red, as opposed to, you know, to your point of that we're hiding it. No, let's celebrate the red. If something turns red, that's telling us.
Right.
That's a signal. That's letting us know, hey, we need to look at this, right? So embrace it. Celebrate in the sense of, okay, hey, here's a notification that we have. What can we do? As opposed to, and it's an opportunity for us to grow. It's an opportunity for us to improve. As opposed to, right, we've seen that in self-reporting. Mm-hmm. Hey, if all of a sudden at a I'll do an exercise when I'm facilitating. Sometimes at the end, I'll say, hey, let's score today's session on a scale of 1 to 10. How do we do? Scale of 1 to 10. And early on, I won't necessarily say, hey, if you score below this, you have to give a reason.
Okay.
You have to say what we could do to improve it. Mm-hmm. As soon as I said that number, an eight.
Right.
Everybody was above an 8, you know, because nobody wanted to have to then give an explanation as to why they chose a 7 or what we could do differently, right?
Yes.
So when we self-report, hey, we you know what? Actually, that's a That's probably an eight. Yeah, when I know, I'm going to have to report this. So when we're looking at manufacturing and results and all that, if we're doing that self-reporting and we know that it's going to have a negative reaction or there's going to be some type of discipline or recompense, something, hey, if I can make it look good, I'm going to make it look good.
Right.
And so what he's really talking about there is, no, we have to make, we have to allow ourselves to be vulnerable, have that culture where people are okay sharing that something didn't work out. I love the sign behind you there. Make mistakes.
Yes.
Right. Not only make mistakes, but make mistakes and then
report them.
Let's report them. Right. Exactly. Because I'm definitely going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
I got that piece covered.
It's so true and it's so human. And again, if the relationship is sound, back to kind of the quality one-on-ones.
Yeah.
I feel free to do that. But if it isn't, then, yeah, I've got to make everything look better than it is. The other thing, brings to mind what you just were sharing. One of the things that I constantly hear, I've worked with probably in the last 4 or 5 years around 300 leaders. So I've got all kinds of stories that I want to tell, okay?
Yeah.
But one thing I often ask people is, does anyone ever get positive feedback here? And one guy came, he said, "This is a praise desert."
desert. I love that.
I have never, and I don't know where he got that. I'm sure he got it from someone, but I said, "Tell me about it." He says, "This is the, if you were looking for positive feedback or praise, this is the wrong organization for you to be part of." So look for the things you want to reinforce too, right? Positive feedback. I mean, and again, people are systems thinkers, but they forget to be systems thinkers when it comes to people. We always want the feedback model to teach us how to improve the process.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of as we work to close out here, I'll have to intentionally close out. Otherwise I won't.
Good.
What role does vulnerability play in a leader being an effective leader?
That's a great question. I think that what I've seen is that most of the time our model of leadership says, I have to be the smartest guy in the room. I have to be the person with all the answers. And if I don't have the answers, I've got to pretend that I do. So vulnerability is hard. Because the expectation from wherever is that the leader should have all the answers. It's almost like being a parent again, where you say, we don't want to share anything negative with our kids because we don't want them worrying about whether we're going to make the house payment this month.
Yeah.
So vulnerability comes when people really discover we're all trying to figure it out together. It's truly collaboration. And that shows up in our work in a really remarkable ways. The way that it shows up is that people start actually maybe 15 weeks into regular one-on-ones after they started giving feedback, saying to us, "We're having really good meetings."
Mm-hmm.
I says, "We thought it was a joke. We're just doing it because you told us to do it for the last 12 weeks."
Right.
And something happened in week 13. So vulnerability shows up by actually just doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, people realize you're for real. I'm for real. I can tell you the truth about what's going on and I can hear it from you. And it's just, you learn by doing. It's experiential. Yeah. So that vulnerability, I can't command it. I can only say that keep working at it and it'll show up in regular one-on-ones and feedback models.
And that's like motivation. We're talking with organizations and, you know, the question comes up, can people motivate others? And the short is temporarily, right? I can motivate you. I can say, you get it done or else. Okay, well, I'm motivated, but I'm not motivated to do that on my own, or it's not changing me at all or encouraging me. I'm just doing it because there's a penalty. And so we talk about, we as leaders can create an environment in which people are motivated.
Yeah.
And like you say, I can't force you to be vulnerable or to embrace vulnerability, but I can create an environment as a leader where vulnerability is okay.
Yeah.
Vulnerability is encouraged, and leaders definitely, leaders, right? They have to lead with that. I can't have the expectation of my employee that they're going to be vulnerable if I'm not. And just an example, I had that from yesterday. I was with a group, and the plant manager was present. And I always like to, in those group settings, if a leader is like that is present, I like to ask them first, right? I like to okay, you know, set the tone, right? And so we were going through and identifying, you know, areas of their opportunity, their areas for growth, which in these four things do they maybe struggle with? And he shared an example where we're talking about developing good relationships. And one of those things is letting people know in advance of changes that will affect them.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we don't do that, that's going to put a strain on the relationship with our people. And so he communicated. He said, you know, we were making some changes, and I was new to the role, and the next time we were going to connect was a month away. And so I just felt obligated that I've got to put these changes out. And nobody was aware of the potentiality or anything around him. And he said it had a very, very negative. Well, again, then that opened the door up for others within the group to share where their opportunities of growth are.
Yeah. You know, the metaphor I think that works and people get is certainly one that works for us and here in Iowa, and that is, it's like farming. I can't command vulnerability. I can't even command accountability. But I'm like a farmer. I can create the conditions that produce a bumper crop. So leaders are really kind of like farmers. They're creating the necessary environment, conditions, circumstances that allow people to volunteer their best, admit when they need to grow and develop. And if you do that, if you see yourself as, you know, I can't command it, but I can create the environment where these things can happen. I love that story. That's a great story, Stephen.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the thing. Just like you say, over the years, you collect those and they're just great examples. Well, Mike, it's truly been a pleasure. And if folks want to connect with you, where can they find out more about your group?
Okay. They can come to our website, of course. It's whiterabbitgroup.com. And should be able to find us there. I'm based in the Des Moines area, and we work really all over the country, but a lot of our work is here in Iowa. And yeah, that would be great. If they want to call me, that'd be fabulous. I can give you my phone number.
Please do.
It's 515-371-7711. So pretty simple there. And it's mike@whiterabbitgroup.com. Pretty simple in terms of email. So I love a lively conversation like this. This like makes my day, makes my week. I love anyone that reaches out to me with a lively conversation about how do we create a developmental culture for our organization. I hope somebody reaches out and makes my day even
excellent.
Better.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike. One of these times we're going to have to jump into the story behind the name White Rabbit Group.
Oh, yes.
All right, we'll save that for another episode, Mike. It's been great having you on.